for a change. Most of the chapters, the first section in the chapter, has been a long one. It's been 12 verses or more. But this time around, we only get 6 verses at the beginning. After 5 is broken up into 3 smaller sections rather than one big one and one little one. And before anyone says, well, this lesson doesn't apply to me, we need to be reminded that as Americans, even if we are in the bottom of the barrel, so to speak, as Americans in terms of our income, even those in America who are on public assistance or welfare or getting a check or whatever you want to term that, even those individuals with that level of income in the United States are doing far better financially than 95% of the people in the world. So, as we look at this, there will be the tendency for us to say, well, that's not me, but we better watch out, because it could be us if we don't take care to make sure that it's not me. In James chapter 5, verses 1 through 6, James gives a warning to the rich. A warning to the rich. And again, we say, well, I'm lower middle class, or I'm lower class, I'm not in the wealthy class, I'm not rich. We need to beware that we don't fall into some of these same traps that the rich do. Verse 1, he says, go to now, you rich men, weep and howl for your miseries that shall come upon you. He says that misery will come upon the rich. Now, I don't think he's referring to everyone who has wealth. We know that that's not the case. Jesus, talking about the rich, said that it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter heaven. And the apostles said, well, the rich man can't get into heaven, Lord. Then who can go? That's at least a fallout that we can't even make. Nobody can make it in. And Jesus, in order to comfort them a little bit, I guess you'd say, said, with man, this is impossible, but with God, all things are possible. So it's possible with God, even, for the rich to be pleasing to Him. It's possible for the rich to go to heaven. We know that many of God's favorite people have been wealthy individuals. We look at Job, and Job was rich. Now, he counted it as sheep and camels and donkeys, and not dollars and cents, but this man, he was wealthy. And we look at Abraham. Abraham had his own army of 300 men that were trained in his household. So that's more than some small country could have. This guy was rich. And we look at Noah. Hey, he owned the whole world for a while. He had it all. There wasn't anybody else on Earth for a while. But, you know, he had the wherewithal to be able to build a boat that big. How many of us can afford to build a boat that big? That's a lot of work and a lot of expense going into that. But we think about some of those people. You know, some of the people that God loved. They had wealth. So it wasn't that God was against wealth. Even some of Jesus' friends, Mary and Martha and Lazarus, they had wealth. They weren't maybe not as rich as the king or anything like that, but they had wealth. And he's not condemning all possessions, but he's going to describe the kind of rich person that he's talking about. But notice what he says. He says, weep and howl for your misery which shall come upon you. And now he's going to describe this, what happened with this individual a little more. In verse 2 he says, your riches are corrupted and your garments are moth-eaten. Now why would their wealth be corrupted? Why would their riches be corrupted? Why would their garments be moth-eaten? Well, I know he's not talking literally, but if we take it from a literal standpoint and we think about what causes those things, we know that silver tarnishes if it is set up. You pile a bunch of silver up somewhere, it would tarnish. It would basically ruin. We know that clothing, if it's not cared for, it'll rot. The moth will get it and eat it. Well, why is this happening to these rich people? Because they're storing up all of their wealth. They've got so much that they don't even have time to take care of what they've got because they've got it. And then he goes on. In verse 3, he said, your gold and silver is cankered, and the rust of them shall be a witness against you, and shall eat your flesh as it were fire. Notice this what he said. You have heaped treasure together for the last day. You see, here's the problem. Here's the kind of person. They heap their treasure together. You see, one of the things that makes them different from someone like Job was that Job said, if there was somebody hungry in my city, I made sure they got food. So he didn't keep his stuff up and keep it away from us. He said, can you show me anybody that went hungry if I knew they were hungry? Anybody that went without clothing if I knew they needed something? And Job confronted his friends with that. They couldn't name anybody. They couldn't find anybody that fit the bill. They knew Job took care of people. He was wealthy, yes, but he used his wealth for good. See, there are things you can do with wealth. You can use it for good, you can use it for evil, or you can use it for nothing and just store it up. And that was the problem with these invitations. We're storing it up. You heap that treasure together for the last day. Well, guess what? That treasure's not going to do any good in the last day. It's not going to do any good at all. You can't buy your way into heaven. You can't pay God off for all your sin. I know that in the Middle Ages, the Catholic Church had a policy whereby people paid certain amounts to get their sins forgiven, but it doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. God doesn't take money in exchange for sin. And so, here are these individuals. They heaped up all this gold and silver, and James says, the rust from all of that, it's going to waste. And he says, that is going to be a witness against these rich people. Now, we can be guilty of the same thing today. We can very easily be guilty of doing the same thing these men did. We say, well, I'm not rich, I don't have millions of dollars in the bank. Well, it doesn't have to be millions of dollars. We may just be eating up thousands of dollars. We may just be eating up hundreds of dollars here and there in worthless things. Eating up wealth instead of using it for God. Remember that everything that we are given, every penny, is God, and we are just stewards of it. We're going to have to give an account for it. When God asks us, how did it benefit me for you to have that car, or that house, or that TV, or that DVD player, or that whatever it is? How did that benefit me? You see, that's what we're supposed to be doing. How many is benefiting God? We're supposed to be using the wealth that He has given into our care for His purpose. Now, some of that is that they don't read. Good. We need to eat to keep up our strength and to keep our health and to be able to go out and teach others about Jesus. Well, we have to buy clothes. Good. We need to be clothed because, you know, folks aren't going to talk to us if we're not. They'll lump us in with crazy. We need a place to live. We need a vehicle to be able to get us around. We know that. Well, there's not a problem with those things in and of themselves. But the question is, how am I using? I've got a nice car, and I'm using it to go to the casino, but I won't use it to go to church. There's a problem there. I've got a nice house, and I'm using it to throw a party, but I'm not using it to hold Bible study. There's a problem there. See, we've got to use that wealth that we've been given in ways that benefit God, because it's His wealth that He's entrusted to us. We need to look then at whether our money will witness for us or against us. God ran down the list in our checkbook or on our credit card and looked at all of the things that we use that money for. Will you be pleased? You need to think about something. Then verse 4, he speaks about money that's been gained by fraud. And he says that money itself cries out to the Lord. You know how Jesus said that if the people were hushed and quieted, and they weren't able to speak out, then even the rocks would jump up and start hollering out about him. At one point, when the people were saying, Hosanna, to him comes in the name of the Lord. I'll make them be quiet. Make your disciples be quiet. Jesus said, if I make them be quiet, the rocks are going to scream at him. Well, in this case, the money is screaming out to the Lord how it's being misused, how it's been gained by fraud. Verse 4, he says, behold, the hire of the laborers who have reaped down your field, which is of you, kept back by fraud, crying, and the cries of them which have reaped are entered into the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth. That's not the Lord of Sabaoth, mind you, that's the Lord of Sabaoth. Sabaoth means Almighty. It's the Lord of all might, of all power. Now notice what he says about this. Here they've got somebody who's come and worked for them, and they didn't pay them a fair wage. Maybe didn't pay them at all. James says, the money you still got in your pocket that should be in theirs is hollering. Lord, look over here. Look what's going on. This guy's got money in his pocket that doesn't belong to him. And he says the laborers who've been cheated, they're crying out to the Lord. Now I know that we are not wealthy in the sense that we own businesses like some people do and hire large numbers of employees. We don't have anybody in our congregation that's on that level of wealth. But we do sometimes hire people to do a job for us in one way or another. We may hire somebody to help us in our yard, or we may hire somebody to wash a car, or we may hire somebody to be our doctor. We hire somebody to do any number of things. Just hire somebody to work on our car. Now the question is, are we willing to pay them fair? Now we just, they're trying to get money more than they deserve out of me. Well, that may very well be the case. Sometimes it is. But we've got to ask ourselves the question, am I cheating anybody else? If I did the same job that they're doing for me, would I be satisfied with the amount that I'm paid? I get somebody over here to cut my whole yard, it's 2 acres of land, and they cut the whole thing, and I don't give them $10. Would I be willing to get out there with a push mower and mow somebody's yard or 2 acres for $10? We need to think about it in those terms. Whatever I think would be a fair price for me is a fair price for that person. And we have to think about, you know, sometimes we complain about how much it costs to go to the doctor. We complain about how much it costs to take our car to the mechanic or these kinds of things. But for that matter, how much it costs to fill up the gas at the gas station. Whatever we put. But when we think about what all that person does or has done or has to do, when we think about how many years of school that doctor had to go through and how many bills that doctor has from going to all that school, how much that doctor has to pay for malpractice insurance because people like to sue him for millions of dollars. We think, well, you know, maybe it's not something. Maybe not. He's so unfair. When we think about the fact that that mechanic has to get his hands dirty and skinned up and just hot and sweaty outside working in the middle of the summer to fix our car so we can drive around in our air conditioner, we might think, you know, maybe it's not something like that. But we need to think about those things. But when we say, hey, fair, be willing to give what the laborer has earned, sometimes we in our society have things so bad. We give people who do a little more than entertain us millions and millions of dollars, and we give the people who really support our society, people like teachers and even the doctors and, you know, the people that are working to help make things better, to give them a little bit of that. We gotta think about what's fair. And I know that we don't set the salaries for some of those individuals, but we need to think about some of those things. But these people have been cheated, and they cried out to the Lord, and the Lord was willing to answer them. Then we see in verse 5 that the rich are guilty of self-indulgence. that ye have lived in pleasure on the earth and been wanting. In other words, you've been self-indulgent and what wanting. You've had everything you want and lived on what that meant. You have nourished your heart as in a day of slaughter. The idea there, of course, in the day of slaughter, they had meat in abundance. But other times of the year, when they weren't slaughtering an animal, they could just run out to the grocery store and pick up steak for a few dollars. If they didn't slaughter an animal, not only had some jerky, maybe, if there was still any left from the last one. But that's the kind of thing that, you know, you've been feasting. You've been living in luxury every day as though it was the slaughter day when you got to have the feast. You see, you've been living like that all the time. You didn't get to enjoy all of those pleasures. In living in pleasure. I don't know if there's another society in the world that is more upset with pleasure than the society you live in. Everything that they think about constantly is, will this make me feel good? Will this taste good? Will I like this? Will it make me laugh? Will it entertain me? Will I enjoy it? All the thoughts to think about it. They think about living in luxury, living in pleasure. We've got to watch out that we don't get that same attitude. We have to realize that self-denial is to be valued, not self-indulgence. We have to say no to the flesh, say no to the body sometimes, in order to say yes to the spirit. That's not always easy, especially in a society where all of these pleasures are so abundantly there. They're out there and cheap. Do you realize that for the price we pay for, you know, we can get a pair of jeans or outfit or dress or a suit even from it. We can get those things relatively inexpensively compared to the income level that we have when you compare what it would cost you for another country. Some of those things in other countries, it takes them 3 months to earn enough money to buy one suit of clothes. Oh, well, most of us can go out and buy something on less than a week's worth of money. We go out and get a whole new outfit for way less than what we would make in 1 month, much less than 3. And we drive cars that cost, you know, somewhere maybe around what we would make in a year or so. On those cars, there are folks in most countries would never even consider that it would ever be possible. That's unthinkable. That they would ever have enough money to buy a home. There's no hope for that in most of these people. We have these luxuries all around us. Fresh fruit and vegetables just available at the grocery store. And so much so that every week they have to throw some of it out. Because there's so much of it. And other places in the world where people, they give almost anything just to have one piece of fruit or one fresh something. All they live on is dried beans, dried rice, and then a ship and sitting for weeks and months and something fresh. Fresh to eat, needed almost every meal. In most cases, they're lucky if they get meat once a week. And then it's like an ounce, not a half-pound hamburger every day for every meal. We don't understand how much pleasure and luxuries there are. Because you think we look at the people that are making more than us and say, well, look at what they got. They're driving a Lexus. They're driving the Rolls Royce. They're living in the big mansion. They're having caviar and filet mignon, and all I can afford is this T-bone steak every once in a while. Instead of looking the other way and seeing all the massive people who have so much less than we have. Who could take 1 month's worth of our money and stretch it over a year, and it would feed their whole family for a year, take care of them for a year. So we need to watch out that we don't have the wrong kind of attitude. We do have wealth, but we need to be sure that our attitude is like that of Job, that we do provide, that we do make sure that we're doing the best we can with what we have. But then, not only are the rich guilty of self-indulgence, he lays one more charge, and possibly this one is the worst of all. He says, You have condemned and killed the just, and he does not resist you. The rich have condemned the innocent. They condemn the righteous to death. So what does he mean by that? Well, you've got to remember that in their society, unlike our society today, there was no Medicare, Medicaid, food stamps, WIC, all of these kinds of programs that we have that provide for people who have these needs. In their society, if somebody with the means didn't help feed somebody else, that person very well might starve to death. They might die. So these rich folks, by their greed and by their covetousness, remember how they were keeping their treasures together. By them doing that, they were actually causing these other people to starve to death in some cases. Do you remember the story of rich man and Lazarus? The rich man was feasting abundantly, and Lazarus would have just, oh, if he could have just had some of the crumbs. And he didn't get anything. Yeah. And then we see how they kept back the wages of the laborer, robbed those people and their families. Now remember, in these times things were different. You know, we get paid, oh, by the week or every 2 weeks or every month, and you know, in the meantime we could get things on credit until our check comes or something like that, or else, you know, we say have enough to get by until our next check comes. Not back then. These laborers that it's talking about were what were called day laborers. Every morning they'd go out into the marketplace and wait for some wealthy person who needed work to come and get them to go work. And this is the story that Jesus tells about the farmer who had the laborers come and pick at his vineyard. They went out in the morning and he found some folks and went back later and found more and went back in the evening, only an hour left to work, and there were still guys that hadn't had a job that day. Now let me explain how that works with these day laborers. If they didn't get a job that day, that meant they didn't get paid that day, and that meant they didn't get to eat that day. There was no, well, you know, I'll get a job next week, or I'll get a check next week. It was day by day. They worked for a day, and at the end of the day, they received their payment. Much like we would if somebody came and cut our grass or washed our car, we'd give them the money right then and there for what they've done for us. This is the way these men work every day. That's how they supported their family. And every day, they had to get paid, or else they couldn't feed themselves and their family for that day. Well, you know what happens when you don't eat. If you don't eat, you get weak. When they got weak, they couldn't work. When they couldn't work, they couldn't eat. How long do you suppose they survive? Without getting sick. Without dying. Without their family getting sick. How long would they survive? Well, here we see what's happening. These rich, keeping together their treasures, refusing to pay these people who were working, condemning the innocent who had done nothing to them, in fact had worked for them, and they condemned them to death and illness, to all sorts of horrible circumstances because they wouldn't, and keeping back their income. Now this is so important when we think about what James said in chapter 2 about favoritism. Do you remember when we studied a few weeks ago about what he said about the favoritism and how it was forbidden? And you don't favor the rich. And this is what those rich people were doing. They were keeping people from eating. They weren't letting them have food. And James says, and you're going to show favoritism to them? Oh no, that's it. You're supporting them and their evil work. And again, we understand that not every wealthy person was like that. Barnabas went out and sold his land and gave the money to the church to provide for all of the needs of his farm that money together. You had good people in the church who had wealth in the first nation, and you do today. There are people of wealth in the church who provide and give thousands of dollars to mission work, thousands of dollars to take care of orphans and widows and all of those in need. Wonderful people. But there are also wicked,
wealth we have. Oh, we may not be as rich as Bill Gates. We may not have the money that Michael Jordan has. We may not be able to own big businesses, but we do have some wealth. What do with what we have? I dare say none of us in here are in the circumstance that if I don't work today and get paid today, I can't eat. Most of us probably have food in our pantry that's the last of the week or two, at least. That in and of itself makes us wealthy individuals. So we need to heed James' warning. We need to think about how we're using that wealth and use it wisely. Because we will be called into account. And any wealth that we have misused, any wealth that we gained by fraud or by cheating somebody out of it, any of that kind of wealth is going to be crying out against us in the day of judgment. It will be a witness against us. On the other hand, when we do good with the wealth that we have, when we help others, when we feed the hungry, clothe the naked, provide for those in need, that money will testify in the day of judgment as well. It will testify for us. If you're here tonight, we have an easy response to the invitation. Perhaps you have not done as you should have with the wealth that God gave you. And you need to repent of that and determine that you're going to be right in the future. If you're here and you have an easy response, we ask you to do so. If you can, and